Sure. In fact, I'll read from what I have on Pope Pius XII. Now, this is a letter that I wrote, a public letter, and I'd refer it to September 8th of this past month. And really, the issue of the heart transplant, I don't think was really the heart of the issue. This is something that happened like 14 years ago, and I think Dr. Gillespie is just drumming this up to get away from another issue that I was calling him on. One last issue to address is that of brain death and organ transplants. CMRI's position is that only a true pope can render an authoritative decision in this matter. On November 24, 1957, Pope Pius XII addressed the International Congress of Anesthesiologists and stressed the importance of the opinion of doctors. Quote, "It remains for the doctor, and especially the anesthesiologist, to give a clear and precise definition of death and the moment of death of a patient that passes away in a state of unconsciousness." And then he goes on, "If, as in the opinion of doctors, this complete cessation of circulation means a sure separation of soul from the body, even if particular organs go on functioning, extreme unction would certainly not be valid because the recipient would certainly not be a man anymore." He goes on further. "If, on the other hand, doctors are the opinion the separation of the soul from the body is doubtful, Pope Pius XII repeatedly said, the opinion of the doctors, opinion of the doctors, opinion of the doctors. Now, when this first matter came up, this was in, I think, 1995, 96. It was a family from Tucson, Arizona, Father Ephraim Cordova, informed me about this, and so we wanted to be informed. I'm not just going to shoot from the hip and make a random statement. We first consulted Dr. Ramakrumaraswamy. Dr. Ramakrumaraswamy was a thoracic cardiovascular surgeon, approximately 30 years. He taught in school, medical school, in private practice setting. Dr. Krumaraswamy said he had no doubt that brain death, true brain death, is death. Now, the other thing is that we didn't just stop at one opinion. We went to Sacred Heart Medical Center, got as much information there, Kootenai County, and Coeur d'Alene, got as much information as there. But I also asked my brother, and this is what I would like to say one of the reasons why I wanted to respond is that in this area of brain death, there are opinions. Now, Dr. Gillespie primarily focused on Dr. Paul Byrne. My brother is a doctor and knows Dr. Paul Byrne personally. And he said he is one of a very few doctors who don't believe in the brain death criteria. But when I'll read from the letter here. "I also consulted my brother, Dr. Anthony Pivernis. He's a DO. He's a director of residency program, chairman of the Department of OBGYN at Sisters Charity Hospital in Buffalo, New York. He's also the regional director of the Catholic Medical Association, Region 2 of New York. He is a recipient last year of the ProVita Award for Outstanding Service in the Pro-Life Movement. He has told me without any doubt the vast majority of pro-life doctors hold brain death as true death. He knows Dr. Paul Byrne, and he has said he's a very small minority of doctors who don't accept this criteria." When I was recently talking to my brother, he was saying that what Dr. Byrne is doing is he's taking some very random and very rare cases where a procedure wasn't followed and saying, look, this is what happens. My brother is saying, no, if people follow procedure, that brain death criteria is very, very accurate. My point is this. I do not have the authority to tell all these doctors, you are wrong, you're going to hell, you're going to commit mortal sin if you believe in brain death. I don't have the authority to say that. And on the other hand, I don't have the authority to say brain death is a proper criteria and that go ahead and have our organ transplants. I have an authority to do nothing. And I want to do this, continue on with Pope Pius XII, because what he says in this next point, and this is 1957, further, the Pope posed the question, and is addressed to the anesthesiologist, has death already occurred after grave trauma of the brain, which has provoked deep unconsciousness and central breathing paralysis, the fatal consequences of which have been nevertheless retarded by artificial respiration? Or does it occur, according to the present opinion of doctors, only when there is a complete arrest of circulation despite prolonged artificial respiration? Where the verification of the fact in particular cases is concerned, the answer cannot be deduced from any religious or moral principle, and under this aspect does not fall within the competence of the Church. Until an answer can be given, the question remains open. And I'm just saying I don't have the authority to make that decision one way or the other. That's all that CMR is saying. And I would also say, too, that in the last 54 years, medical technology has advanced tremendously. They know things now that they didn't know back then. Now, with the little that I know, and I'm not a doctor, but I'm just going to express, having talked to someone who deals with this issue of brain death, etc., it's very clear the doctor who pronounces death cannot be and is not the doctor who is part of the transplant. They have to be two separate things, so no one's eager beaver to start harvesting organs and make money. Other thing that I know is that when someone's brain dead, they do a complete scan of the brain. There's no activity at all. They'll take a cotton swab of alcohol, put it on the eyeball. If someone's in even the deepest coma, there's going to be some type of reaction, no reaction whatsoever. Ice water on the eardrum, no reaction whatsoever, et cetera, et cetera. And there's the apnea test. I'm not sure what that apnea test is, where they shut things down. And if everything, all the vital things are going down, it's the machine and not the person. Now, I'm not saying I agree, disagree. I'm just saying I do not have the authority to make that decision. This is just what he brought up about this issue with brain death is all smokescreen. Because there's another issue, and that's at the heart of the issue, and he was trying to completely dodge that. I like to just say that Dr. Kumaraswamy is a good friend of mine. I knew him personally. He came up here multiple times. We've had long conversations. Dr. Kumaraswamy, unfortunately, got ordained a priest. How many knew that? And as good a friend as he was, I said, Doctor, you do this, we're done. This is not the laws of the church. You're married. You have no right to be ordained. And I'm sorry, I hadn't talked to him after that ever. He died, and we never talked again. These things that are, there's, because of the situation of the church today, there's a lot of what I would say uncanonical things taking place. Just recently, I know of a priest who was ordained who had no seminary training, does not know Latin, and he's been a priest for I don't know how many years, and he's wanting to know what he should do. Not anybody I've been involved with, but it's this group that I do not want to be associated with. Now, this man who has no knowledge of Latin has had no business getting ordained. And to me, I doubt if he could confect the sacraments validly. I mean, enough is enough. We had the same thing happen down in Guadalajara. There was a priest from the Society of St. Pius X who he was with, the Society of St. Pius X down in Argentina. And I was helping him out, plus the other priest that I help out down there. We got consecrated by a married bishop. This man, his name, the bishop was Orbina. He was married. He got ordained, consecrated, and he went and consecrated Scatino, Father Jose Scatino. I said, enough. I'm not going to have anything to do with that group. And the ramifications of this are repeated. I mean, I've run into, and not, this is not just recent. I'm talking about like 8, 9 years ago. I run into married men, people just like you out there, married deacons. And now what are you going to do? It's a scandal. It's not what the church teaches. And I don't want to be associated with that. There are priests who have been ordained who never went to seminary and don't know what the heck they're doing. And then I got lay people saying, well, he said this and he did this. And I was like, that's not right. It's kind of like this. You know whether somebody knows what they're talking about or knows what they're doing or not. How many of you men are mechanics here? Anybody mechanic or knows a little bit about mechanics? I mean, okay, you know if somebody has no idea what they're talking about, they get into an engine or something about this and that, and you're thinking, man, they don't know what they're talking about. That's not this, and this is not that. It would be the same thing in the area of the priesthood. When you hear somebody says he's a priest and he's talking about this and talking about that, and you know they don't know what they're talking about. That's not moral theology. That's not dogmatic theology. That's not the liturgy. I mean, some of these people don't even know how to offer mass. I mean, basic fundamental things, they have no clue. That was the issue. I don't want to be associated with that, and that goes back to 2002. And unfortunately, this issue had resurfaced, and I was not in favor of what was going on, and it's not going to be a part of it. I mean, that's the whole thing. And I don't want to, for some of you who are not aware of it, I don't want to disturb your peace, but I'm just saying that I think that was just simply a smokescreen. Another issue is that of rhythm. He made a big issue about that, and I just want to say that what we teach is right out of the books. Right out of the books. The concept of rhythm, and whether you use the term rhythm or periodic abstinence or natural family planning, that's not the issue. I mean, that's never been the issue. Our priests have always been right on the money exactly what the church teaches. But there are some people who follow the Diamond Brothers. How many have heard of the Diamond Brothers? Peter, Michael, Diamond. They're very much against baptism of desire, baptism of blood, and the other issue is rhythm. Totally against it. But this issue of rhythm had come up. We have been battling with it, which some people really have a hang-up on it. And I was just saying, this is what the church teaches. And now it's getting twisted. No, we're liberal and we're this and that, or whatever else. Now, there may be a difference of opinion about what constitutes a serious reason to practice rhythm. But in that realm, it's like I would have to use as an analogy the third commandment. We should keep holy the Lord's Day. Go to Mass. We shouldn't do unnecessary and servile work. Now, are there people out here who probably have difference of opinion on what's necessary and what's not necessary? Probably so. There are probably some people who would rather die than go get a gallon of milk because there's company over giving them milk. And some people say, well, you know, we didn't foresee this. We have company over. We're going to need to get a few things at the store. I mean, there's some people who are going to take it one way or the other. And it's not for the people who say, no, you better not. Oh, you can go. You are such a liberal, terrible, horrible Catholic that you went to get that gallon of milk. You broke the Sabbath. You broke the third commandment. You know what I'm saying? There's differences of opinion. In the area of modesty, exact same thing. You know, you have people that are very, very conscientious and great about modesty, and I've gotten heck from that. You know, they've sent me pictures that they wear skirts down to their ankles and sleeves down to their wrists, and it's up here. And this is the way it's, and it looks like they're in the 1800s. It's fine. Does everybody have to dress that way? And should they condemn people who don't dress that way? No. But you see, there's differences of opinion. And with the area of rhythm, that got completely twisted. That we're the big liberals and we're this and that. That was never the issue. The people that Dr. Drosky was coming to the rescue for absolutely rejected rhythm, even to the point of questioning whether Pope Pius XII was the true pope. That was, to me, over the top. And now it's like, oh, we've never doubted that. That's not true at all. That's not the issue. But you see, these are, to me, straining the gnat about issues and swallowing the camel when it comes to these other things that, to me, are clearly violations of what the church teaches. And, you know, I just want to say this. Dr. Jesse mentioned the thing about Bishop Schuchart. You know, and why I didn't do something when he got consecrated. I was 13 years old. That was 1971. You know, I apologize at 13 that I didn't know canon law or anything else like that. But my response to that is this. CMRI, Congregation of Mary Immaculate Queen, was founded in about 1967. Back then, The Novus Ordo was, the Vatican II was being rejected, the Novus Ordo was being rejected. I mean, there was no Society of St. Pius X, there was no two bishops, there's no none of this. When I came to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho in 71, 72, there was a Father Clement Kubisch, God rest his soul. Father Kubisch was a Catholic priest, pre-Vatican II Catholic priest. Very clearly, Father Kubisch had recognized Schuchart and what all was going on. He said that according to the circumstances in the church, you know, this is the best that we can do. He had no problem with Schuchart or anything else like that. Now, obviously, Schuchart had his problems. They were private, of a private nature. When we became aware of them, when I became aware of them, I went to Father Dennis and the other two priests and said, you got to do something about this. And something was done. Schuchart was confronted. He left in 84. The three priests who got ordained by Schuchart got conditionally ordained because the lineage was old Catholic, and from then on it's all been from the Took bishops. But my point is that it's apples and oranges back then, which we're talking about 1971, which is what, 40 years ago? And the situation today where there's Catholic bishops and priests and things are somewhat well established. I'm not going to go into the detail. If somebody wants it personally, I'll give you the detail, but I'm not here to bash anybody. I'm not here to put anybody down. But I am here to say this, that I think that there was a concerted effort to divert the attention to the real issues and to get into these other issues that were not to the point. I would just have to say this. Are we perfect? No. Is CMRI perfect? No. Have we had our problems? Yes. But we weather these problems. I mean, we've been around for some time. I joined a seminary in 1974. Father Kazmir joined, I think, in 76 or 75. You know, we've weathered a lot of storms, et cetera, et cetera. We have continued to grow. Right now we have 32 priests worldwide. In a seminary, we have 12 seminarians, 8 religious, 4 seculars. We have more seminarians coming. We're getting a lot of vocations from our school and our boarding house. You know, students very interested in the priesthood or the religious life. We're growing, and we're not in any way diminishing or anything else like that. My issue is that I'm not perfect, CMRI is not perfect, etc., but I'm not going to compromise the principles of the canon law or the mind of the church or the teachings of the church to be associated with married clergy, priests who are untrained, and that type of stuff. I can't do it. Dr. Kumaraswamy is my good friend. When he got ordained, I said, this is it. I'm not going to be associated with you. Father, you know, down in Guadalajara, Scatino, I knew him for a long time. I had to break ties with him when he got consecrated by this married man. I don't want to be associated with that stuff. Does that mean I don't got my problems? We don't have our difficulties. We don't have our struggles. We do. I mean, we have the issues and the problems that occur, and we try to deal with them as we can. But I just want to be Catholic, and I want to follow the laws of the church, and I'm not going to, when there is not a necessity, break those laws and disregard celibacy or disregard the necessity of training, etc. I mean, we've had, I'll give you an example, his seminary has been put down. We've had a seminary there. I made a mistake. I put 21 years. It's 22 years. We moved the seminary from here to Omaha in 1989. We've had multiple priests come through that seminary. We've had men that were well-educated go through the seminary. We study the books. Remember, how many have ever heard of Father Shell down in Los Angeles, Father Shell? Father Shell, I visited him. He says, who do you use for canon law? He says, Biskorin. He says, yeah, I knew Biskorin. I was down visiting. We had priest meetings with Father LeBlanc. He says, who do you use for scripture? I said, Steinmuller. He says, I used Steinmuller when I was in a seminary. I mean, we use the same books. We're going through the same courses. We cover everything. Is it hectic? It's very hectic. I teach 4 classes in the high school. I teach 4 classes in the seminary, Monday to Friday. After school, I got multiple things with emails, letters, phone calls, this, that. The weekends, our priests drive sometimes 20 hours a weekend, going back and forth from Colorado or down to Alabama and back. Father Gregory sometimes does it by car. I do, the simple route is 7 hours, 3.5 one way, 3.5 another way. We get back in the wee hours in the morning, we get up and we teach, and we do that the whole school year. But we're there, and our classes are very well structured. We have all the tests, all the material right there at our disposal. And some of the things that were said about, you know, the seminarians don't eat well and they only have sometimes bread and water, that's false.